Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Mark My Words here on Blog Talk Radio's Life Coach Radio Network. So I'd like to start this evening with a quote. The quote is by Marshall Rosenberg, author of Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life. And the quote is this: intimacy is the ability to be with someone else's pain. Intimacy is the ability to be with someone else's pain. I'd like to invite folks to call in over the course of the next hour and tell me what you think of that. And we'll get some discussion going around that, as well as around some of the other really fascinating concepts that my guest is going to be sharing with us this evening. You could also join us, so call us live. The number here at Mark My Words in our studio is 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. And you can also join us in the chat room on the show page at blogtalkradio.com. So my guest tonight is Mr. Paul Sterling, creator of the Magic Relationship Method, Compassionate Communication for Couples. So according to Paul, it's critical to be able to communicate. Actually, according to a lot of people, not just Paul. Most relationships end because the problems are bigger than our skill sets. The language of love is one of feelings and needs, and most of us are not learned in their vocabulary, the way a lawyer is trained in the language of law, the way doctors are trained in the language of medicine. So we must be learned in the language of love. So tonight, we're going to discover five mistakes that people make in communication. We're also going to learn about the three different types of relationships and why it's important to know which type works for you. We're going to explore the concept of powerful vulnerability, which is how to communicate in a way that's powerful, not as a victim, but vulnerably. So welcome to the show, Paul. I'm very excited to have you join us tonight.
Thanks, Mark. I'm excited to share some of these concepts and share a tiny bit about my journey of how I got here so that the listeners can connect to this journey and how I learned these mistakes, actually, by making them. So
old school of hard knocks.
Yeah. And it was a bumpy road, one divorce, three broken engagements, before I stumbled on something called nonviolent communication with Marshall Rosenberg. And that was a turning point for me.
Great. Yeah, you know, I was watching some of your videos, and so I got that from watching them. And I was really fascinated, and so I'm glad to be able to share those as well with our listeners. So actually, feel free, folks, to go and check those out on my website at markshall.com on the Mark My Words radio page on my site. And you'll see Paul's information as well as some of the links to go and check out his videos and other offers that he's got for us. So thanks for sharing all that with Paul. And I'm very excited about being able to chat through some of this stuff with you live. So very cool. So you made some of those mistakes yourself. And it's really funny how so many of us think that an expert has to be somebody who's always done it perfectly, when rarely some of the best experts are the people who have messed it up so perfectly.
Perfectly, so consistently. Yes, all of that.
Great. So actually, that kind of leads me to my first question, which I guess answers the answer to which lives in there, and that is that I know part of your background before you became a relationship coach was that you were the captain of an Alaskan commercial fishing boat. So what I want to know is how in hell does somebody get to be somebody who is a relationship coach teaching compassionate communication to couples from the place of being an Alaskan commercial fisherman?
Well, let me put it this way. It was not a straight journey. I left home at 17, and I headed for Alaska. And I've got to tell you that the communication skills I learned on boats didn't really serve me in my relationships. And I went through a divorce, two broken engagements. And actually, when I left commercial fishing, I ended up, through a series of different events, studying with first Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad Poor Dad, and then I stumbled on Tony Robbins' information and ended up working for Tony Robbins. He's a neuro-linguistic programming guy, or neuro-associative conditioning is, I guess, what he ended up calling it. And then I ended up studying systems, Dr. Deming's work. He's the guy who taught the Japanese about quality and productivity. And I ended up as a business consultant traveling around basically the world. I worked in for the city of Albuquerque. Most of their top management went through my course. And I worked in Hawaii and Hong Kong and back up in Alaska. And I noticed, though, my relationships still weren't working as well as I wanted. And I was teaching business communication. I was teaching the leaders communication, and still there was something missing about relationship communication. And it wasn't until I stumbled on Marshall Rosenberg's work, Nonviolent Communication, and I ended up going to Sweden to study with him for, it was like 3 weeks at the time. And It was an amazing event, one of the most expensive investments I've made in myself up until then, and one of the most valuable ones. And from that point, my idea about relationships shifted, and about communication. And most relationships don't end because of a lack of love. They end because we run into problems that are bigger than our skill sets. And almost every relationship problem has a foundation of being a communication problem.
Sure, of course. Of course. So, you know, one of the things I'd like to ask you, actually, to if you can start if you could start here, because I think it relates to a lot of the reason why the listeners tonight are actually here. And we had talked before, Paul, about the beliefs and action and results triangle. Fascinating concept. Can you share a little bit about that to kind of give us a framework of what we're going to be chatting about tonight?
Okay, so I hope the listeners have a piece of paper and a pen out. So draw, if you do, I'll go semi-slow. It doesn't matter if you don't. You still get the picture. You draw a triangle in the shape of a sort of a pyramid. So as you draw that in the
as
lower
left hand. As most triangles are.
Yeah. Well, that works like that. The lower left-hand side, and this is why I'm believed that most people come to me as clients, is they want different results. So in the lower left-hand corner, you put results. Now, to get a result, you need to take actions. So you put actions in the lower right-hand corner. And by the way, if you want different results, you need to take different actions. Now, what controls the results is our actions. What controls our actions, you can put at the top of the pyramid, is your beliefs. So your beliefs control your action. Your action controls your results. Now, what controls your beliefs a lot of times is your past results. So if someone has cheated on you in the relationship or betrayed you or not treated you well, you start to have a belief around relationships, like relationships are painful, lovers suck, people lie, all of that. And then at the other side, you want to have a great relationship. So part of you has a belief that relationships suck and are painful, and the other part says relationships are good and I want one. You drive around a bit like with one foot on the gas and one foot on the brakes. And what happens in the subconscious mind is you tend to attract whatever you believe.
Mm-hmm.
So if you believe that your lovers are going to cheat on you, then you're just waiting for that to happen. And even if they're not cheating on you, you're going, well, yeah, but they're going to. And you start to treat them that way, and you start to create what you don't want, but what you think about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting, in the coaching training that I do at IPEC Coaching, we talk about the self-fulfilling travesty, you know, which is that we keep attracting the same results because of who we're being and what we're putting out, which is usually the opposite of who we truly are. It limits our potential. We limit ourselves. And because of what we're putting out, we keep attracting the same stuff, and we become more and more entrenched. And it becomes a vicious cycle where we become more and more and more of who we're really not. And we start seeing what we expect to see. So we call that a self-fulfilling travesty, and it's kind of based also in things like the law of attraction, which many people know about from the book and the movie The Secret, and something that we work with on IPEC called the law of being, which is about how who you're being in the world attracts the people, the situations, the events, and ultimately the results that you get in your life. So it sounds like a very similar concept.
Yeah, and the interesting thing in studying Dr. Deming's work. He's the guy who taught the Japanese about quality and productivity, and I went around teaching corporations about systems, is if you think about it, very often the symptoms are visible and the cause is invisible. And I'm going to give you another sort of example here that we haven't talked about yet, but if you look at the front end of a car and a tire is worn off on half of it, like you're look at it, the vertical, one side's worn off, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
You may not know, but what most people say is...
Oh, it's the alignment.
Yeah. See, the only reason, though, that you can answer the alignment, Mark, is you know something about cars. Now, the alignment is part of the internal system that's invisible. What you get to see is you get to see the tire is worn funny. Now, how that applies is if you only deal with the symptom, what's visible is you start replacing tires and doing different things, and you never align the car and get to what the core of it is. Now, if we start looking at what's invisible, our beliefs are invisible, our communication system is invisible. A lot of times we have habits and patterns that we don't even know that we're doing until somebody points them out to us, and it's like, oh, shit, I never knew I did that. That's where those five communication mistakes come from. It's like habits and patterns that ways I communicated that almost guaranteed I was not going to get the intimacy I want, the connection I want. And so the listeners, definitely you're going to want to write down these five habits and look at them. And at first, they might be invisible to you, but there's something called the reticular activating system, and that's our unconscious part of our brain. And the way that works is when I bought a Prius, I didn't think there was a lot of Priuses around. But the second it was up in my consciousness, it's like everywhere I go, there's Priuses everywhere.
Right, right.
And that part of my unconscious mind made them visible. They were invisible before. I told my unconscious mind, that's important, look out for it. That's one example of it. The other way, Mark, is you can think about if you're at a restaurant and all of a sudden somebody says life coaching or somebody says Mark, there could be 100 conversations around you, and that filter goes, pay attention here.
Mm-hmm.
So once you start learning these communication mistakes, your brain will start to pay attention, and you'll start going, oh my, I just did it again. I did it again.
Right.
And if you do it enough times, you can destroy even a really wonderful relationship.
Sure, sure.
And
absolutely.
Not even know what happened.
Yep. And how many people do we know, you know, that do that? How many people do we know that have been in numerous relationships? And it's like, you know, we can see to a large degree what they're doing that's destroying them, but they can't. So that's quite common. I want to take a pause for a second because actually we do have a caller on the line that I'd like to take and see what the question is. So we'll come back to that track in just a moment. But let's take the caller. So caller whose phone number ends in 4696, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, and good evening, and what a wonderful opportunity to have these discussions. Thanks, Mark, for doing what you're doing. My name is Sarah.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm wondering how a couple of things fit into what you fellows are currently talking about, and that is, one, the moral fearless inventory of ourselves, which we do in order to replace bad habits or things that get us into trouble with better ones, since when we know better, we do better. And the work that David Burns did out of the University of Pennsylvania, where feelings do not occur in and of themselves, they are really caused by thoughts. And when we improve our thinking, our feelings improve, and everything changes in the whole world that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. It's a great question, Sarah.
I'm wondering how it fits into the fellow who's on the other end. That's been talking with you.
Yeah, Paul.
Great.
Sterling here.
Great question.
Well,
go ahead,
Paul. If you look at it, I'm gonna mix some of Marshall's thinking, some of, you know, I studied with so many different people. I don't know where everything originated, and some of the combinations are my own, but Marshall talks about feelings based on whether needs are being met or not. So if I'm having good feelings, it tends to be that I have a set of needs. And now I want to be careful because there's people that are like, there's only Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Well, Maslow's hierarchy of needs are designed for survival, food, shelter, community. There's another set of needs and hierarchy of needs that we need for well-being. Now, when our need for connection is not being met, we have certain feelings. But in between the feelings and an event, we tell ourselves a story. So this is what the caller was talking about, and is if a certain thing happens, five different people can be at the same event, and they're going to have five different feelings because the event filters through a story that we have, and that story is going to control whether or not or how we feel. It's going to tell us whether or not our needs are being met. Now, the power comes when you start to be able to identify what your story is. And this is one of the mistakes. So I'm going to dive in and tell one of the mistakes here. And, Mark,
great.
There's a slight clicking on the phone, and I don't know if it's my phone or yours. And I don't know if you can hear.
I'm not hearing it at this end, so I don't know what to say about that.
No problem. All right, so let's dive into an example. And one of the five mistakes that I talk about is something called storytelling. And here's an example of it, and it will tie in with what the caller was asking about. So in my bedroom on one side, I have the overhead light switch. On the other side was a small reading lamp, and a former lover of mine, we were together for about 4 years. So we'd spent some time reading in that room, and what happens is that at night, one night, I go to turn out the overhead light, and she's still reading, and I look over at her, and she's upset. So I go, honey, what story are you telling yourself right now? And that's just shorthand. When you learn sort of the lingo, it's not derogatory. She got it right away. She said, I'm telling myself the story that my needs don't matter to you, and I'm pretty upset. Because you're turning off the good light. When you're done reading, you turn off the good light, and I get the bad light to read by. And I heard her story. I didn't defend. I didn't protect myself. I totally heard her story, fed it back, and she got it that I got it. And then what happened is I said, can I tell you my story? Now, can you guess that it might have been a different story than that? And so my story was, if I don't turn off the overhead light and I go to sleep, she has to get out of bed, go around the bed, turn off the light, go back in the dark. It's going to wake her up. She's going to have a hard time going to sleep. I thought I was totally taking care of her feelings and needs. I thought it by turning off the light, I was helping her. Now, you see the same event, two totally different sets of feelings because we have different stories. Now, the next night, what happened is I went to turn out the light. I remembered her story. So I said, honey, now that I know what your story is, I'll leave the light on. She goes, no, no, no. Now that I know what your story is, turn the light out. Now, what changed? The only thing that changed is the story. And by being able to identify the story, what happened is it increased the amount of intimacy. What stops the intimacy is when we believe our story. Like we say, that is the truth, rather than I'm just telling myself a story that you don't care about my needs, and here it is. Now, this ties into something that, Mark, you and I talked about earlier. You said vulnerability. This is powerful vulnerability. When we start expressing the story that we have going on inside that's causing the feelings, we actually have an opportunity to change it.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone comes home late from work, you're sitting at home waiting, you can have all sorts of different feelings based on whatever story you're telling yourself. One story is they're having an affair. Another one is they may have gotten hit by a car or they had an accident. you know, and each story is going to create a very different feeling.
Excuse me, can I jump in here? How about a little knowledge-based decision-making? Making those kinds of decisions and parts of our stories by actual facts and reality, our own strength, hope, and experience, our own realities, which don't have to match anybody else's, right?
Right. And here's an interesting thing. I talk about this, and what a lot of people argue for is logic and facts. And I think that that's a great idea, and it doesn't tend to work as well with human beings. And I'll give you an example of that. My beloved, well, actually, I woke up with that same person. I had had a dream that she had an affair. Now, I woke up with all of the energy, the, like, intensity, as if she'd actually had an affair. Not all of it, but a lot of it. Now, she could have just said logically, you know what, we're living together, we're working together, there is no way in hell, you know, and she could have tried to logicalize, yes, I know I made that word up, she could have tried to logicalize away my feelings by explaining all the facts. It wouldn't have helped me at all.
Mm-hmm.
What helped me is she spent a couple of minutes giving me empathy and understanding for the pain and the fear that came up based on the dream. And once the energy was dissipated and I felt heard and understood and valued, then I could actually go to the facts. But the first thing you've got to do before you can get to the facts is get through the emotion, through the pain.
Right. Okay. That's a really wonderful scenario. However, if you were by yourself and woke up, let's say she was out of town on a business trip, and you woke up having had the same dream with no way to converse with her, you'd have the same feelings. Now, fear being false events appearing real, can we help ourselves here?
Sure.
Part of the lack of communication that I'm hearing is the lack of expressing one's experience in a way of, A, taking responsibility, being accountable, and being appreciative of the presence of the other, but not relying solely on our needs being met by somebody else. And the cooperation and the interdependence of that, which strengthens relationships, takes out the possibility of the vulnerability being painful, being used badly. I'm really sensing that my reliance on something, unless it's outside myself, bigger than me, because there's so much in the world I can't be responsible for, not my job, kind of thing. Like, I don't control when the sun comes up,
mm-hmm.
when the flowers bloom, when my tomatoes get ripe and stuff
right.
like that.
Right.
But I do kind of control my own self-inflicted pains, the knowledge of my experience or the denial thereof, and my responsibility in doing my job is to find out who am I bringing to this party.
Actually,
yeah. Can I, Paul, if I could just jump in there for a second. So what I'm hearing, Sarah, is that you're somebody who's done a lot of work in the area of taking responsibility for yourself and healing yourself in many ways. You've done a lot of transformational work, and I think that folks like you out there may have more access to their ability to do that. And then there are folks that haven't necessarily done a lot of that, and they're living in a bit of a different space. And I think that they're going to be at a bit of a different level. And if it's harder for them to access that, then some of the things that Paul's talking about would certainly almost be necessary first before they can really do that sort of advanced level stuff of really thinking through it on their own and really recognizing that their experience is totally their own. I think that's a pretty advanced concept, and it sounds like you're there.
It's a lot easier to blame mommy and daddy than to be accountable. And I
Absolutely.
Think one of the things that's
yeah.
not being done, especially in the coaching area, is to say, yeah, you've had some nasty things happen, but you know what? You're here. You've survived it. It already happened. You're not going through that again.
And I and I think what I think what's really, really critical is to realize is that you know, we're not talking and coaching about not doing that. It's really, though, you can't start there. If you start there, what you end up doing is not validating the person's experience as real for them and valid for them so that they can release the energy around it. Once they release the energy around it and they get, okay, so you understand, it makes sense to you, and I'm not crazy for feeling this way, right? And they know that there's a connection, then they're open to coming to those conclusions and hearing that information. I think that's kind of where we're headed here. So I'm going to go ahead and move on. And certainly, thank you so much for the call, Sarah.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So, yeah, so Paul, any concluding comments about that before we move on? Because she raised some good points.
She did raise some good points, and there's a difference between, I was talking about it earlier, the difference between the symptom and the cause. And she was wanting to go deeper into the cause, and like you, I think you were saying, sometimes we have to handle the symptom and then go down into the cause. And if somebody is stimulated, really stimulated, saying that it's their beliefs and it's their problem or their issue, it can make things worse rather than better. And there is definitely a point where the most power is to become responsible. And I can actually give myself empathy. If I've had a bad dream, I can wake up and kind of ask myself, are you feeling pretty upset and needing this? And kind of use that pattern of communication and work with myself. And it feels a lot better to me when I can do that with my beloved. There's something there, like, it helps relax, it goes quicker, and it's not like I don't do the work myself. I definitely do. So it's an ongoing process.
Yep, it certainly is, and we all fall into those traps, you know. We all fall into those traps.
And before I ask our next question, I would just like to take a moment and announce some upcoming shows and something very special as well that I want to let you all know about. So first of all, the next two upcoming shows here on the Life Coach Radio Network, Tuesday at 12 noon, Fun to Fortune, Entrepreneur Startup Success with Coach Jeff Valensky. So join the conversation with those who've created fun businesses and uncovered their fortune in the process. And also on January 13th, 8 p.m., Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen. Every second and fourth Monday evening, Reverend Jen hosts special guests who bring their own unique take on spirituality. And lastly, something very special I'd like to let you all know about. And this is for all you perfectionists, recovering perfectionists, and overachievers out there. Or if you know of any, you'll certainly want to share this with them this week. A very special presentation called Recovering Perfectionist My Ass. Maria Pescucci, life coach and founder of Campus Calm, which helps college students overcome stress and meet success and develops female student leaders, is one of my students who graduated from IPEC Coaching, and she's done a TED Talk. If you've ever listened to a TED Talk, you'll know this is a huge opportunity. And I have to say, the talk is amazing, and I really want you to listen to it and share it. Maria speaks of her personal battle with extreme perfectionism and overachievement and the physical illnesses that manifest as a result for her. She takes you through her journey from severe pain from self-induced stress-related illness, including endometriosis, to an empowered life on her way to joy, happiness, and fulfillment. I'd really like to help her video get enough hits this week so that the main TED Talk site will pick it up, as right now it's on the TEDx Buffalo Women site, which is the regional TED conference where she spoke. So again, for all of you perfectionists and recovering perfectionists, or if you know of any, this is the TED Talk to listen to. You'll certainly be inspired and moved, as is a requirement for all TED Talks. Maria did a beautiful job, and I'm personally very proud of her. Help her get enough hits to make her TED Talk hit it on the big TED Talk screen. But more importantly, it's a video you will be sure to love. So be sure to watch it this week by going to YouTube.com and searching Recovering Perfectionist My Ass. So congratulations, Maria Pescucci. You can also visit my website at markmywordsradio.com and scroll down to click on the upcoming schedule, and you'll see the link for Maria's talk posted there.
So, you know, as we're talking, Paul, one of the there's a song ringing in my ears, and it's that song, where they sing, once upon a time I was falling in love, now I'm only falling apart, right? Total eclipse of the heart.
Yeah.
How do we go from falling in love to falling apart? From, as you said in one of our conversations, from I can't wait to go home to I hate to go home. How the heck does it get there?
So let me give you, I'm gonna. This is a circuitous route that we're going to get there. I am a whitewater kayaker, and kayaking has level 1 through 5. There's actually like a level 6, which is sort of insane suicide. But level 1 is flat water, lakes, easy. Level 2,
so I'm hearing
a little
total
bit of
water
current
theme with you, from fishermen to kayaking. So I'm getting the water theme here with you. Okay.
And I'm living up in the mountains of Colorado right now. I'm looking out my window at a river, so totally a water theme. and my beautiful yard, my Japanese garden, has got like 6 kayaks sitting in there. So it's an obsession. It's way beyond, you know, just the normal thing. So if you think about it, level 1, level 2, a little bit of current, level 3, there's obstacles. You've got to know what's going on. If you don't, you can get flipped and you end up swimming. Level 4, if you don't know how to roll, if you don't know how to recover from getting rolled upside down, there's a good chance of getting hurt. Level 4, you can get hurt pretty easily. Level 5 is pretty intense and dangerous, and you really need to know what you're doing. And you need to have good recovery skills. And I am a class 4, and I do some class 5 boating, basically in a state of terror most of the time, and then at the end, relief that I survived it. Now, how does that tie in to relationships? Well, if you want to go to a class 5 relationship, you need to have class 5 skills. And what happens in the relationship in the beginning, you can talk about anything and everything. And as we start to move through the relationship, if we don't have good recovery skills, we start to avoid issues. Oh, we can't talk about money. We can't talk about sex. We can't talk about religion. We can't talk about their parents. And pretty soon what happens is the relationship gets smaller and smaller because we don't have the skills to talk about important issues without taking things personally or making them personal. We're stuck in the blame, shame, guilt. We're making the 5 communication mistakes. And so what happens if we can't be intimate with our partner, and like Marshall said, intimacy is the ability to be with our partner's pain. If we hear it that it's our fault, then we start pulling away. And pretty soon what happens is our relationship world gets smaller and smaller and smaller. It's almost like if you bruise an arm, you don't want to touch that arm, so you don't want to bounce against anything, so you start pulling in, and then you bruise your other arm, and then you pull in, and pretty soon you don't want to touch anybody or anything.
Right.
And so our relationships get smaller. The other thing is if we're not clear on our value system, and I know we're bouncing around a little bit, but this is important to think about. If you think about people like plants, say a cactus needs dry, arid, a lot of space, not much water. An orchid needs high humidity, and they might need a lot more care. And they could love each other, but they're not going to do well, and the more time they spend together, the more that their differences are going to become apparent. So love and compatibility don't always have that much to do with each other. You can really love somebody and not be compatible with them. So when somebody comes to me and they're like, I want to save my relationship, I go, let's look and see if this relationship's worth saving. Are you guys really compatible? And if we work through whatever this issue is and got you back to what normal is, whatever normal might be for their relationship, is that really something that's good for you? Is that healthy for you? Are you settling? Because now I went through the plant analogy. I'm going to give you another thing. There's 3 different types of
relationships. Actually, before you do, Paul, let me ask you that. So would one conclude from that that love then isn't always enough? A lot of times
No.
We say, look, if we just love each other, we can get through anything. But are you saying that compatibility is also necessary?
Well, love is definitely not enough, because if relationships ended because we stopped loving each other, they would not be incredibly painful. We could just say, you know what, I'm done. Was good. I still respect you and appreciate you. Bye. No,
yeah.
The painful heartbreak of relationships ending is because I still love them, but we're not compatible. We're not.
Right.
We don't have really the same sets of values, or we don't want the same type of relationship. And this is an oversimplification, what I'm about to give you, but there's three basic types. And if you get this, it's really helpful. Type number one is a survival relationship. And that's where once you get married, it's until death do us part. We don't care whether we hate each other. We're staying married. And that's where the marriage, whatever that, it becomes like a third entity, that becomes more important than either of us.
Right.
The second level is comfort. Now, this is where people are like friends, but there's no passion. We're trying not to rock the boat. And this can happen some in same-sex marriages, because there tends to be there's not the feminine-masculine polarity. People become like close friends, but there's not that energy. And it's like it takes some work to keep that alive, keep that polarity up there. And so it's got to be a conscious effort so that you don't just end up becoming friends that are living together. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want. That's the comfort. And then the third level up is about growth. And growth is like where your personal growth is more important than staying in a relationship. If the relationship is starting to stifle you or not support you, or the passion is gone, then it's this type of person's going to look for something else. These are the type of people who, like me, who take workshops and are interested in personal growth, or listening to radio shows like this, or producing radio shows like this. Now, my first divorce was partly because I was about growth and adventure, and she was about comfort. And there's nothing wrong with any of these like different types. But you're going to have a lot of problems in the relationship if you're not clear what type you are and what type you want to be with.
Right. Sure. Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And as a relationship evolves, if you don't have a conscious conversation about what type you are and what you want in a relationship, people get together because I love you, you know? It's like, let's see whether or not we can live together, and they start living together, and there's a big, what happens is also, at the beginning of the relationship, it's small decisions. Where do we eat? You know, do you want to go on a date? Do you not want to go on a date? As we become more connected, the decisions become more difficult, and it really tests our values. And one of the things Tony Robbins says is most rules are unspoken until broken. And so we have these unconscious relationship rules that a lot of times we inherited. They're invisible. And we don't even know that they're there until we get in a relationship, and then your partner does something.
And like, right.
You know, you're supposed to do the dishes because that was your job. And it's like, my job? Who are you kidding? That's not my job. That's not my role.
Sure.
So as we spend more time in a relationship, these things become more and more apparent. And if we don't have advanced communication skills to resolve these issues, the relationship gets smaller and smaller. There's less and less that we talk about.
Right, sure. So, you know, there's Wow, there's so much I want to ask you because what came out of that, and we're going to be out of time if I ask you all of it. So one thing, of course, being the whole thing about you talked about the masculine and feminine energy in a relationship, and that in a same-sex marriage or same-sex relationship, the balance of those two energies might be different than they would be in an opposite-sex relationship. And I would love to explore that with you a little bit because of the conscious effort that you're talking about, how it takes to maintain that. So I want to address that, but I also do want to make sure that we take the time to get to the five common mistakes, one of which you mentioned already earlier when our caller, Sarah, called in. So let's put the masculine-feminine energy piece on hold for a moment, but if you can walk us through those five mistakes that people make in communication.
I can do that, and it's so hard for me not to just go there because my masculine energy, I got to answer that question. There's a question there. So,
and
right,
coaching,
I'll
we call that stacking questions, right, where we ask more than one question
yeah,
at a time
I'll
and leave the
leave
person with like
skillful hands to bring us back around. The five mistakes, and I'll just tell you all of them, and then we'll kind of go back and go through them. Number one, and I'll give you sort of the opposites, is case building. Mm-hmm. So we're building a case. So we can either build a case against somebody or connection with them, and a case building is very seductive. You know, it's like once the viewers watch or listen to this call, go watch TV, go watch any sitcom show or any crime show, and you'll see case building. They're gathering the evidence. They're trying to prove who's right, who's wrong, who's good, who's bad. You look at this, it's creates war in our relationships. It creates war on the planet. Case building is very challenging to even see that you're doing. You know, mm-hmm. it's totally seductive. Like, I'm right, mm-hmm. you're wrong. I'm going to, even if it's for a good thing, I'm going to prove to you how wrong you are for smoking cigarettes or being an alcoholic or whatever it is. And what right. happens in case building, all you do is you create resistance.
Right.
It pushes okay. people away. So you can either be building a case against or a connection with. Mm-hmm. You know, and I talked about the example of storytelling when my beloved had told me her story about what she made up around the lights, rather than mm-hmm. me resisting and going into case building about why I was right, I just leaned right in and built a connection with her. Wow. So no wonder you feel the way you feel. If I had that story in my head, I would feel that way too. And she got it. There
right.
was no resistance. I just leaned right mm-hmm. into it. And we call it leaning into the sharp edges. It's a developed skill. Our typical thing mm-hmm. is to defend and attack. So number
right.
one, case building. Number two, storytelling. We went through a little bit of that.
Right.
Number three is message assuming. Now, message assuming is what it seems to be. It's there's two sides of it. One is when I send a message out and I assume that you heard what I meant you to hear. Number two is when I'm listening and I think I'm really hearing you the way you want to be heard. Now, what happens is when we message assume, we start to check out. This is not what I'm about to explain is not the normal way to communicate. It's, mm-hmm. well, the normal way to communicate is I try to talk and talk and talk and hope that you get it and assume that you're going to get it. Versus if I'm doing message, and I'm message busting here. I'm not assuming it. I am trying to make sure that I'm clear. I might go a sentence and go, can you tell me what you heard me say? Wow, mm. you heard that? So I'm going to give you a metaphor for this communication style, and it's very different than the normal one, but once you get the metaphor, it will make sense. In Denver, Colorado, my mom was following me in another car. I was dropping a car off to get it repaired, so she needed to follow me to her repair place. I knew my way. She didn't. Now, there was a bunch of turns and lights. If I want her to follow me, would I just speed all the way there and then look in the mirror when I arrive and go, where the hell is my mom? Mm-hmm. Or would I stop, You know, like if it's a yellow light, I stop. At every turn, I look in my rearview mirror. I go slow, and I make sure that she's behind me at each light, at each turn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's how I'm teaching people to communicate. Not all the time, but if it's important emotional communication, you might only be able to go a sentence or two and check in. Go, can you tell me what you heard me say? Or I'll go, let me tell you what I just heard. And that
right.
way you'll know the second that you've lost that other person, wham, you lost them there. Now, what's
mm-hmm.
normal is if I really want you to understand me, I might try to keep talking and hope that you get it. So I'm going to stop now, Mark, and ask you what you heard me say.
So, yeah, so you were talking, so you listed case-building, storytelling, message-assuming, and in message-assuming you talked about really checking that we actually got the message that was intended instead of just going with what we think the message was, but really checking it out by saying, so, this is what I heard you say. Is that correct?
Yeah, and here's the thing. If you think about it, there's a really important concept built into this. If I'm communicating to you and I want you to hear and understand me, what's more important to you, what you think you heard or what I think I said?
Say that again.
All right, so I'm saying something to you. What's
right.
more important to you, what you think you heard or what I think I said? What's more important to you?
Oh, what's more important to me? I get it. What I think I heard, right.
Right. And so to me, in communication, what happens typically is, I'll give you a silly example, but I go, honey, will you take out the trash? And all of a sudden I get this look like, and I go, wow, what did you hear me say? I heard you say that I never help around the kitchen. Now, I can go and go, that's not what I said. You never hear me right. You know, like all the rest of that. Or I could go, wow, that's what you heard. Here, let me try again because I want you to hear something different. And just
mm-hmm.
take responsibility that I'm going to communicate until you hear what I want you to hear. And rather than defending or saying that's wrong or all of that does is slow it down. Because when I ask, tell me what you heard me say, they told me what they heard. They didn't tell me what I said. They told me what they heard. They heard that. Cool. No wonder they're
right.
upset. And rather than making them feel even worse by saying, that's not it, you never hear me right, well, the normal outcome of most communication misunderstandings. So if you understand that, you're going to just change
sure.
the way you communicate and become more responsible, more powerful.
So, yeah. You know, it's funny. I once heard the quote, something to the effect of, I think what you think you heard isn't what I think I said.
Right.
Something along those lines, but right. But, yeah, so it's interesting because what we do is we defend ourselves and blame the other person instead for assuming that's not what I said, that is not what I said, blah, 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 you know, and make them wrong and make them bad for it
right.
instead of just saying, okay, so you know what, maybe I really didn't make myself clear if that's what you heard because it's not what I intended. And then to get their buy-in for giving it a second pass, actually, by saying,
yeah.
so can I try again?
Yeah.
And then go,
let me
yes,
try
please.
Again. Wow, that's not what I want. You know, and part of what I have with my lover is something we call a do-over. Let me have a do-over
uh-huh.
here, because I don't want you to end up feeling like I don't care about your contribution in the kitchen. I want you to
yeah.
understand. I just wanted you to take out the trash so we could get done with the kitchen sooner, and then I can cuddle up with you on the couch.
Yeah. And the results of that kind of a do-over are so big that, I mean, it's like they would say on the H&R Block commercial with the do-over in your tax, like, now that's a major do-over.
Exactly.
Because the value of that's huge.
It's totally huge. So that's mistake
yeah.
number three. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's message assuming. Mistake number four is cup stuffing. And this one is, yep. And what cup stuffing is, and it came, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on how I came up with this, but Basically, if your cup is full, and I don't mean in a good way, so say you come home and you had a flat tire and you got a speeding ticket and you got, like, it was a tough day at work, and you walk in the door and your beloved says, honey, we need to talk about the finances. It's like there's not going to be a good listening in that moment. It's bad timing. They're trying to stuff stuff into a cup that's already full. If they want to be heard and understood, what do they have to do? They have to empty that cup first. And so a lot of times what we do is we set ourselves up to lose right away in having a conversation because we don't time it right. We don't ask that simple question, can you hear me now? Can you, like, listen? Is this a good time to talk about this? And you can say in code, no, cup full. And cup full just means my... like, either I'm focused right now, I can do it in 15 minutes, I need to, like, unwind and take a shower, I need, like, when I don't know that I've mentioned this, but I've been teaching this in prison for the last 7 years. And when I come home from that, before I come home from teaching in prison, if it's summertime, I'll go kayaking, I'll go do something to kind of, like, unwind, empty my own cup. Take responsibility. So when I come home, my cup's not so full.
Right. Sure.
And when somebody says cup full, rather than, because they can, you know, we have this in, like, our language, the straw that broke the camel's back, can't you see it's too much, leave me alone, get the hell out of here. But it's a lot simpler to just say, honey, cup full, give me a half hour.
Yeah, you know, what I hear as a possibility in that, which is really great, is that, I mean, some people already do that, but they might not do it effectively because of the language they use. They might say, you know what, I don't have the time for this right now. And the person really feels, I mean, I know if I was to be on the receiving end of that, I may interpret it as, you don't have the time for me right now or for my crap right now. Like, it's something about me. I don't have the time for this right now, the thing you always do, you know. Whereas if it's like cup full, well, then the listener gets that as, like, well, it's nothing to do with them. It's just that your cup has too much other stuff in it, and it got there before I did, and I need to wait in line. It's not about me.
And it is. It's not about you, and it is that I actually want to listen to you. I want to honor you and not just nod my head and pretend I'm listening. And if my cup is full, that's all I can give you. I can't give you, like, the honest, open, intimate listening that you really want, and I want to give you.
Right.
And I do that with my lover. Like, you know, sometimes she'll walk in the other room, and she's kind of talking away, and I go, wait. Now, if you keep doing that, you're going to condition me that what you're saying is not important and that I don't have to listen, and I don't want to do that with you.
Yeah.
If you're talking, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, just being reminded now of a relationship I was in a while back, and, you know, my tendency in most of my relationships, except my coaching relationships with clients, I tend to do more. I tend to be the person in the relationship that does more of the talking, and I'm sure that listeners out there that know me are chuckling right now, going, "Yeah, think." So, you know, it's one of my gifts, right? And it's interesting because a former partner of mine understood that and really gave me the leeway for it and was really fine with it. And we sometimes, you know, he would come over and I'd be like, hi, how are you? Oh, my God, you know, you'll never guess what happened today. I spoke to someone and I would just launch into my download of my day or whatever was on my mind without any regard for if the timing was good or if there was something that he was busting to share or, you know, whatever. And he helped me realize that by saying it. At times, he would do it very gently and very lovingly. He would put one hand on my shoulder and one hand on my chest, and he'd say, hang on, Mark. Wait a minute. Me first right now. Me first right now.
Let
there was
me
a part
my
of me.
Cup so I can hear you.
Absolutely. And there was part of me that responded internally with, oh, really? And got upset. But another part of me that was like, I felt taken care of. And I got that the upset was mine. The upset was my stuff. It wasn't his. And that really what was coming from him was the feeling taken care of. And when I focused on that, I realized that it's very easy for me to hear that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
and so it's a great concept.
Let me bounce through the last one, and then we've got, I know we're running up on time. And by the way, relationships are complicated. They're challenging. And in your coaching, my coaching, if you want to be good at anything, get yourself a coach. If you want to work out, get a personal trainer, because what's going to happen is they don't put up your BS and they help you have a breakthrough. And I highly recommend, if you want to have a breakthrough in your relationships, find somebody that you, and I don't even want to say be comfortable with. That's an illusion. I don't think you want a coach that you're actually comfortable with. You want someone who's going to push you, because comfort is the death of a relationship. You want to have somebody who pushes you and has you grow in areas that you're blind spotted. And so the fifth one is the fatal F's, fix, fight, flee. And say you come home and you're upset about something that happened at work, and I'm going, well, did you try this? Did you try this? Our feminine energy wants to be heard and understood, and our masculine wants to fix it. Did you try that? And the feminine energy doesn't want to be fixed. There are plenty of me that doesn't want to be fixed. I want to be heard and understood. I don't want to be fixed. And then there's a masculine side of me that wants to get right in there. Well, try this, do this, then it. And so what happens is first we try to fix, and then when that doesn't work and you come home the next night and it's the same problem, and we get in a fight over it. And then the next night we flee. So fix, fight, flee. I don't even want to talk about it. You come home and you don't even want to say anything. So those are the five mistakes. Case building, storytelling, message assuming, cup stuffing, the fatal F's.
Great.
And then
great. Very, very insightful.
Let them know about your website again, and you were going to touch on the feminine and the masculine.
Yes. So for those of you who would like to get some more information and check out Paul's work, if you check out my website at www.markschall.com, that's MarkSchall.com, www.markschall.com. And then just click on the Mark My Words radio tab, and on that page you'll see a little synopsis of today's program, as well as two links, one which take you to Paul's videos, Paul's free videos, and then also Paul has worked out a really nice deal for listeners tonight with purchasing some of his recorded material and whatnot that will save you about $45 to $50 just through clicking through from my site for that special offer. So I really invite you to do that. And Paul, on behalf of my listeners, thank you for offering that. It's very generous of you. So briefly, can you touch upon how masculine energy and feminine energy, how does that show up in a relationship differently when that relationship is between two men versus two women versus a man and a woman? Because my understanding is generally that it shows up differently, probably based more on other factors than the sex of the two people, although the sex of the two people will certainly be one of those.
And it's almost a conscious choice. There's a term that I've got, of sweet surrender. It's like tonight, because I can, with my lover, she can decide it's her masculine night. She's going to take over that, like that role. I'm going to penetrate you. I am going to be the dominant in a loving way, but I'm going to be the dominant. And I can surrender and go, damn, you go. Or she can surrender.
Right.
So it's not whether or not it's the man or the woman. It's like, is there polarity between the two people? And the more polarity, the more like magnetic attraction, the more that someone can be on their feminine side versus a masculine, that's going to create a certain level of attraction. If there's too much competition for a certain role, it will reduce the polarity and reduce the attraction and reduce passion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, tonight, honey, which role do you want? You want that one? I'll take this one. It has nothing to do with like who's more dominant, who's better, who's whatever. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got to do with it. basically a choice or a tendency. Somebody could be have a tendency to be more feminine or more masculine, and then let's emphasize that and create that sort of energetic polarity. And there's other nights where there's not polarity, where there's just like you can have really quiet, sweet lovemaking that there's not a lot of polarity.
Right.
And that too.
So is there and this, I'm wording this as a yes or no question, but I realize that one of the answers could be it depends. Is there less likely to be polarity if the two people in the relationship are of the same sex than if they are of the opposite sex?
You know, I would be making up an answer if I said that. Hasn't been my major research. I've taught my trainings for relationships, and I also teach about Tantra and sacred sexuality. The people that show up at my workshops, it really doesn't matter which group.
Yeah.
But I haven't done specific research where if I'm answering your question right there, I wouldn't be answering it from an intelligent research position. I'd be making the shit up.
Gotcha. No, and I appreciate that. It's interesting. I've often had a theory about that, and I often said if I was ever going to go for my PhD, probably my doctoral thesis would be something related to the notion of understanding opposite-sex relationships by looking at and examining same-sex relationships. Because if you want to know how something behaves on its own, you isolate it, right, so that you can kind of learn more about it. So you can probably see how does a woman behave in a relationship absent of another woman? How does a man behave in a relationship absent of another man? You'll get some really good insights that will shed some light on what happens when you have a man and a woman together in a relationship and how those things show up. And I think that speaks to the masculine and feminine energy. And that would be an interesting thing that would shed some light on my question, because I've always wondered about that. So, but I think one thing that's very important for listeners to understand is that, yes, masculine and feminine energy is something that is not necessarily directly related to, is more likely not directly related to the sex of the person. And I think we'll shed some more light on that, too, specifically on my second show in October when we talk about transgender issues and gender expression with Tony Ferriolo, which I think will be a very exciting call as well. So great. So as we wrap up, Paul, any final message for the listeners out there that you think would be the most valuable thing for them to take away?
Yeah. A lot of times we look at relationships as almost a competition. You know, we're going to get the best of them. And it's like, look at what do you want to make a stand for in your relationship? How can you create something with partnership and passion and possibility? And what are you making a stand for? And what are you making a stand for with your partner? And what do you need to let go of or get off of? Where are you trying to be right in your relationship that's going to destroy it?
Right.
And take this on and make distinction. It's like take it on. There's a difference between important and urgent. And what happens, people get confused and they wait until it becomes urgent to work on their relationship. And by that time, a lot of times it's too late. Make your relationship deal with the important stuff. It's a learned skill. It's a muscle that can be developed. Get yourself trained in this area.
Excellent.
So that's what I
and
would
there's
say.
So much...
Reach out.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and there's so much great stuff out there as you shared with us. And, of course, working with you is certainly an option for our listeners as well, which I would also highly recommend. And I'm sure the listeners can get that just from having heard you speak. So I would certainly recommend you as an amazing resource on this stuff. So thank you. I really appreciate that. And you talk about being right, and how we're so stuck in being right. And I think that that's really interesting and valuable because, I've often said to people, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Or if I'm driving down the street and there's an intersection coming up and I've got a green light and I see that this jerk is coming and he's going to go through the red light, and I go, well, you know what? Screw him. I'm right. I've got the law on my side. I am right. I'm going. So I go through the intersection, and bam, he hits me. Now I'm dead. But I'm right. So sometimes being right isn't necessarily what we're always aiming for. So great. So thanks for sharing that. So thank you, Paul. This has really, really been great, and I'm jealous of your water view in Colorado right now. I am actually in the middle of Manhattan. In fact, you probably even heard a siren or two go by, but it's exciting to be here too. So before I wrap it up for tonight, feel free, listeners, feel free to mark your words if you'd like. If you've got feedback for us that you'd like to communicate to the Life Coach Radio Network, you can visit us at blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network. Then click on the follow button and send us a message. If you'd like to send feedback directly to me or suggest a show topic, go to markshall.com and fill out the contact form. I hope you all enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. Thank you so much for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Good night.